Hello and welcome back to Fishnets and Philosophy. This is your host, Mix Bell Marigan, and once again I am continuing my exploration into the question, why horror? Where each week I'm joined by a different guest where we try and pick apart this big question that every horror fan likes to dwell on. So today I am joined by the wonderful Chandler. So before we jump into having this discussion and exploring the topic, if you could just kind of introduce yourself and kind of like what your connection to horror is.
Sure, yeah. First off, hey, thank you so much for having me on. I want to say you look awesome today, by the way.
Thank you.
Killing the look. Really, really appreciate it. I can't do makeup. And so you have to teach me some things.
Gladly.
My name's Chandler Bullock. I guess I am a horror aficionado, if you want to put something on it, just because I am a fan, but I also have a scholarly background in it. I have a lot of opinions on it, I suppose, and I'm also a creator, so I'm an actor, I'm a writer. I like to create it just as much as I like to kind of unpack it, so I like to do it just kind of for people to get more out of the media that they kind of consume. So I do that with my podcast, The Beauty of Horror, where similar to what you're doing with this kind of track with your podcast, I bring on guests, and my whole focus is that I get them to look at a film from an aesthetic perspective. So strip away all of the personal thoughts and feelings. We'll get to them, but mainly it's about how did it make you feel, and now let's talk about why you might feel that way. So I guess trauma digging in a way. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Very interesting. It's a little bit on hiatus at the moment. That's just due to my day job. But there is more to come. So I have that. And I also have the website, spreadthebeauty.org, which also when I have time to kind of like upload things and do things, since like I have a small team put together, but I'm kind of the webmaster. What we do is we have the extension of the podcast turned into a website that has articles about
those
things.
Cool.
Yeah, so I'm getting guest writers to come on board and write out their heart's contents about some sort of an aesthetic that they have like a passionate feeling about. So, yeah, I guess I'm the touchy-feely, but also dig deep into your wounds kind of
person. Amazing, brilliant. And also, if that's not the best way to enjoy horror, I don't know what is, to kind of dig deep and explore trauma. Hey, that's why we love this genre. perfect, but no, that's all sounds so fascinating. And yes, when this episode eventually releases, I will include all that fun stuff in the show notes. But the first question that, because for every guest I've sent on a list of kind of jumping off questions to try and see how we can navigate this fun discussion. And the first one, which I always like to kick it off with, because I think it's the one that every horror fan kind of is always asked this question, and always likes to ask other horror fans this question, because it's a way of just connecting and, you know, exploring that genre with someone else. So these are kind of two slightly related questions. What was the first horror film you remember watching? And then kind of spinning off from that, what horror film made you fall in love with the genre or films? Because sometimes there's an overlap, sometimes it's different.
Ooh, I like that. You've perfected the question that every podcast asks. You made it a more dynamic question. Because what I like about this is you asked, what one do I first remember watching? I know that the first one I ever saw, it's because somebody told me I was very young, but the first one that kind of like pops into my head of like those sleepless nights, that sort of stuff, if I really think back on it, I'm gonna say it's probably something like, I don't know, Jaws, Alligator, something of that nature. I was born in 87, so it's probably anything from like 75 to 88 was probably the range where the first one I actively watched was from. So it could have been a Friday the 13th movie as well. I remember distinctly seeing an old marathon on the Sci-Fi Channel when they were and did all that stuff. Yeah. but yeah, the sleepless nights and stuff. I just remember a lot of Sci-Fi Channel, so it's kind of hard to say. It's just a late night thing, turn that on. Horror adjacent, however, what kind of really got me into it was probably Beetlejuice. That was the one. I am obsessed with Beetlejuice, unfortunately.
fortunately, it depends. But yes, no, I think that I love those type of, I like to, the gateway horror films, where it's like, you know, in some ways you could classify them as horror, but like they're less about fully scaring you because they're more comedic or something like that, but they have those spooky aesthetics and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I adore the gateway horror films. Yeah, so I think Beetlejuice is a good one to kind of really go, oh, I like this stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's when I discovered I liked all the, like, you know, I always liked Halloween, so dressing up as a kid was great. Sometimes, like, when we lived in Florida briefly for a time, and we had, like, a little old wooden house that we rented out in, like, a big kind of opening in the woods, just off the highway. It wasn't properly out in the sticks, but it gave you the feeling of isolation. You know, you're pretty close to the town. And I remember there, we hosted, like, haunted house stuff for our friends and for their friends and stuff. So, like, my mom was always pretty big on interior design stuff and decorating it and having a blast with that in Christmas. So I already knew I was really into the color scheme, especially the purples and the greens and all that. But I didn't really know where it came from until, like, I watched Beetlejuice, like, 20 times on VHS and kind of realized, like, I don't think this really, you know, was around much before this time period. You know, it was, like, 80s all the way. They did that. But you don't realize that as a kid. You're just like, I like this thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what it was. It was just a nice movie for me to watch that was silly. But for me, I was spooked. It was constantly looking
at there's
eyes and stuff. Ugh.
Some bits in that, like, especially when, like, you know, the parents, like the ghosts, like, you know, are trying to scare away the invaders of the house type thing. Like, they get up to some pretty spooky shenanigans where they mess with their faces and stuff like that. So yeah, I can understand being a kid watching that going, no.
Oh yeah. And also, I think for me, like, the most impressive moment in the film, and there's a lot of them, but the one that sticks with me, and it's probably a scene why I keep coming back to it, is when they open the door with the chalk and you have that green light pulsing out of it. And so you see Lydia looking through the keyhole and she sees the light coming from the bottom of the door, and the way her eyes just get wide as the green light goes over her face. That stuck with me a lot, because I'm like, who wouldn't feel that way looking at that? You'd just be like, what the fuck? ever since I was a child, I was just kind of like, yeah, I kind of feel like Lydia Deetz, just kind of doing my own thing and nobody's letting me do it. I get this. I get this movie a lot, you know?
Yeah, no, it's definitely an easy one to identify with, especially when you're someone who feels in some ways kind of like, you know, an outsider to everything else and stuff like that. It's one of those good films to get into it. So kind of spinning off from that, because this is a question that always interests me, but would you have, like, kind of like a clear delineation or kind of lines, like, about what you would consider this is horror, this isn't horror? Or is it more kind of like, you know, it can flow, like, it does, is it in flux?
Genre. Lovely discussions. I am of the camp that genre is both clearly defined and fluid at the same time. It's kind of like, through the fluidity, there are overlapping moments where you're like, there it is. There it is. You know, it's the whole Leonardo DiCaprio pointing at the TV. That's it. That's the genre thing. That's how I kind of feel about it, because there are so many ways you can play with genre and subgenre that you're always going to have one that is kind of like the core of it.
Mm-hmm.
But finding it sometimes is a little difficult if you give all of the other tropes and stuff that you're doing equal time and care. So then you can kind of make a nice little ensemble of genre as well. And that can really, especially nowadays, I mean, we're in 2022. If people weren't blurring genre at this point, I think that we were not doing ourselves a service as creatives.
You
gotta mess with it a bit. And it does make it hard to define. And so for me, I'm like, yeah, I can see that there's a delineation. But for instance, like, I would say Silence of the Lambs is a horror movie. Due to, like, you know, the sheer impact of what the hell's going on in that film. You know, it has a true crime vibe, but it's not a biopic, so it doesn't quite work as just a straight thriller to me. I mean, take Silence of the Lambs and then take, like, Kiss the Girls and see if you find that they make you feel the same way or not. You know, that's where I don't think Basic Instinct, for instance, is a horror movie, even though it's very tense.
Yeah.
But it's like, what is making you tense? What
exactly
is it that's making you tense? That's the, so I think it's more in the details of, like, what's going on. But it's interesting you bring it up too, because do you follow the horror community area on Twitter? As in literally like the communities that they have? There's one that's horror Jed Shepard put together.
No, I don't follow any of like, in the specific community spaces.
Exactly. Not not the amalgamous horror community that people.
Right. I was just like, I think I'm involved with it.
a literal space on Twitter. Yeah.
Okay.
Horror is the title. And somebody popped in recently saying like, I see a lot of people in here calling thrillers horror movies with like a little side eye kind of emoji. And so I'm seeing a lot of my friends just kind of back and forthing with them because they're like, that is really the shittiest take I've ever heard. Just for them trying to argue the nuance of like, no, it's still a horror movie. Because they felt that, you know, you need the inexplicable. And that's cool. I mean, there are a lot of definitions. And I think that the reason this conversation prevails is, for one, opinions are never going to stop happening, of course.
Yep.
But I think for another, it's something we were just briefly talking about before we started recording. It's like, our access to things and knowledge is so vast right now that I think you're often going to have people get very seminal pieces of academic work, and I love that they can, but without not necessarily being told how to interpret it, because I also feel that I've had plenty of teachers where I'm like, I don't like how you're reading this, you know. But I do think that some of them need just a little bit of guidance and nuance, so you can also kind of filter through people's bullshit when they're writing. So that helps a lot. That when you read those texts, you can also read a little bit better about, is it just their opinion that they're being kind of dogmatic about, and maybe they had a good idea and you agree with it. That's all fine, but don't take the work of, say, like, a Baudrillard as if he fucking mattered. Like, you know, like, he's just a person with an opinion who had very good observations, you know? Apply them.
Yeah, no, brilliant. I like that. And, yeah, it's, like, you can tell, like, there's so much, it's, like, because there's so much access to information, which, yes, on one hand, great, people have access to information. But as you're saying, on the other hand, it's kind of like, if you don't really know how to kind of... you know, you don't have the specific knowledge base or skills to really unpack that information and apply it correctly, then you're kind of just shooting wildly in the dark. And, yeah, go.
I encourage that a little bit. I'm a bit of a shoot from the hip kind of person myself. So I, you know, we can't break down existing oppressive systems and stuff without being a little gung-ho about things. So, like, change it. Do things your way. However... the number one thing that you forgot to do is be curious. Ask questions. Mm-hmm. Don't be afraid to be wrong. And the only way that you're wrong is because you decided that you thought something else. That's all. Don't be afraid to change your mind. That's all.
Yes. Learn. That's, yeah, that's like, that's one of those, like, that's a t-shirt quote right there. Like, you know, don't be afraid to be wrong. And I think that's something that I find a lot within, like, certain, like, kind of horror community spaces, and not like the specific space you mentioned, but just the kind of general amalgamist, like, kind of horror community spaces. But there is this kind of, like, almost people aren't curious, or they're, like, you know, headstrong on what they feel their opinion is, and anything that is not that, then it goes against it and it's wrong or bad. And it's like one of the questions that I kind of have, and it kind of actually leads into it actually quite nicely, but, like, this is something that I'm never sure if it's just a Twitter social media thing, or if there are genuinely people who actually kind of have this type of thinking. But there is this type of horror fan who will kind of say, this film wasn't a good horror film because I wasn't scared. And I want to know what you, like, think about that. Does a horror film need to actually be scary to be considered quote-unquote good or effective? Or... like, is that just someone who has such a, like, you know, blinkers on idea of what horror is? So if it doesn't align perfectly with that idea, then it's all of a sudden not a successful horror film.
Right. I want to also answer just real quick about your curiosity about whether this is like a Twitter thing or not. And no, this is not an internet thing at all, because I actively shied away from being a horror fan online for like a good almost 10 years or so, just because I found it so annoying to share that conversation with so many people at the same time, especially when I was like 18 and I was just done with high school. I was like, I'm tired of my like the opinions of my peers. They're all not thinking like me. So at the time I probably would have said they're all stupid, but now I'm just like, they just don't think like me, and it's very frustrating. And so I just kind of like, nah, I'm good, and kind of like walked away from it for a while. Went on and did other things, and I found through just, you know how it is, if you find somebody in the wild, and you might just kind of be like, oh, cool, I'm going to go catch a movie, and they're like, oh, what movie are you going to catch? And you're just like, I'm going to watch the new Scream. They're like, oh, my goodness, you know, and then you like bonded. So I had a few friends like that, and they definitely had that attitude of like, oh, you think that's a good horror movie? It's hardly even a horror movie. There's no blood or boobs or anything in it. Like, they all have very specific criteria.
Blood or boobs, if they don't appear, it's not a horror.
There's a name for a podcast, somebody. Blood or boobs podcast. So yeah, it's like, it's either they wanted that, or they wanted it to, like, you know, some people really want to be scared. Other people are looking for comfort horror. Others are looking for horror comedy and don't really know that horror can be more than, you know, just silly and dumb.
Yeah.
You know, and what you're looking for, I don't really have any qualms with that. I just have qualms with how you're telling me you feel, because you're telling me that I should feel differently. That's the
yes.
Point. And they do this. That's what. So it's a phenomenon that I've experienced in daily life. And those were also people that I eventually kind of like, not like consciously cut out or anything. I just very slowly stopped asking them to come over for the movie nights. You know, I was tired of having a debate about, like, we could just go like, it wasn't my bag, and then let everybody else enjoy their conversation. Unless you have a legit, like, I got triggered by this, I need to talk about it, or I noticed something that will change your view on this because, well, I don't know, there's too much of this issue that bothers me, and too you know, you can tell when, like, I don't really mind. That's another topic I do want to get on, actually, before we get into censorship and stuff. I'm just kind of foreshadowing, like, there's one question you had about censorship in art and horror, and I do want to get on that, but I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I just... A little preview of it is I don't really mind content of the stories and stuff being very rough on your emotions and some depictions of people being really nasty, bad people.
Yeah.
If you have a point to it. If you're kind of just doing it because, hey, some people act this way. I'm like, okay, but why'd you have to write them that real? Like, unless... I kind of want to see something like some sort of story arc with somebody, like that. Whether it's just them dying or, you know, they become more of a villain. That's cool. I just make them worse, I guess, you know? And so so I just feel like some people who get caught up in their "it didn't scare me" thing, forget to ask themselves the question, what actually scares you? Have you ever thought about it?
Exactly.
That's what I like to do to people.
Exactly. And also, they kind of completely forget that what's scary to one person could be not scary to another. Like, what if, you know, fear is a subjective experience. So just because one viewer watched a film and goes, "Yeah, I, you know, didn't get much of a feeling from that," the person right next to you could have been literally shitting their pants. Like, you know, everyone's different. Well, hopefully not literally, especially in a cinema, but you know, I'd hate to be that cinema cleaner, but but everyone's reaction is different. So I think that's something that a lot of people forget. They think because I didn't have a reaction that I wanted, ergo everyone should also not like this movie. And like, before we kind of get into that kind of specific censorship question, like, even though like the phrase almost seems to have like lost all meaning, but that phrase of just let people enjoy things, it seems to have almost lost all meaning, but it stems from that of like, anytime someone goes, oh my god, I just saw this movie, I really loved it, you almost like have to almost expect someone to come in and go, oh, that film was shit, why did you like that? It's just, why like, shouldn't you just say, eh, wasn't for me, but I'm happy you enjoyed it? Like, that's always my approach type thing, you know?
Yeah,
so it's just tedious. But yes, as you mentioned, like, that kind of sensitive question is one that I want to kind of lean into, and it kind of links back to that as well. But It's something that I'm always interested in because I'm always 50-50. I'm always flip-flopping where I land on it. Like, I do think on a general foundational level, art shouldn't be censored, because if you kind of say we can censor art, then you end up getting to, you know, banning books and certain American states banning, you know, putting in laws that say you can't say the word gay, you know? So, like, that kind of stems from saying art can be censored. But at the same time, do you think that filmmakers maybe have some form of a responsibility for the art that they're making, for like the imagery or quote, again, I hate that this is like a word in 2022, but quote unquote content, but you know, the stuff that they're putting out there, like, do you think there's a responsibility to how people might pick it up?
I can't say that word confidently. Ish.
I think that's somewhat, where I'm always, yes, with,
you know, partially, yes, is where I'm kind of headed with this, that yes, it's not that is not inaccurate,
yeah,
but I would say that the subtlety that I would feel with that is, for one, like, look at the word content, if we will, so look at how it's used, the context it's used, and how we're using it. We're literally just talking about details. The pieces of the puzzle that make a film. Your story, your plot elements, your characters, your dialogue. That is the content of the film. Your framing, all of that. Not content as in consumer content. Just the content.
What is contained within the film.
Like, the book has writing in it. The film had writing and is now visuals. Okay, so that's a very broad spectrum of things. So in that sense, is the director responsible for all of it? No, I can't say that the director of the Suicide Squad is responsible for Jared Leto. I can't, you know? Jared Leto's gonna Jared Leto, regardless of the script that you give him. So, I would say the hiring director is more responsible for that situation. The casting director. You know what you're getting with famous people, you know?
Yep.
So there's that, but then a director would, or, you know, and there's a writer, of course, so you also have that too. Can a director be, who did not write it, be held accountable for what was in the script? Yes and no, because they could decide to take, you know, parts of it out. And it's also not even as clear cut as that, because is it a studio picture? Is it
exactly studio? Like, the bigger you get with a film, the more people are involved.
What was the process of making it? And I think what people don't understand is it's not just, oh, they didn't have enough money, so they couldn't do all those things. Like, no. Because you didn't have as much money and you didn't have as many sponsors, you literally didn't have anybody to tell you how to make this movie before you threw it to a studio. So you were totally capable of being accountable for what the hell is in that movie. You decided to make it that way. And I'm not saying that in a lot of people want to use that attitude to, like, dog things like your graphics or your, you know, cinematography abilities and stuff. That's where the budget does come into play. Could you afford that program to make those graphics? I don't know. What you could afford to do, though, was proofread your script. You know, to maybe not do that icky scene where, why does this person have to be naked right now? There's nothing artistic about it. It just seemed like you've been waiting to get her out of her clothes since you walked on set. You know, you can vibe with that. And we don't even know if that's the case. And that's the thing. Assumptions can go wild. So that's why I get into an ish kind of situation, because I don't think that censorship is the answer to it. Accountability is.
That's
our job. As, like, I mean, in our sense, you and I, not everybody you're going to have on here is necessarily coming from a journalistic world. But that is the job of a journalist and of a critic, is to kind of just ask questions so that we can get more context and be like, oh, now I judge you. Like, now that I know the answers to it, now I think I can judge you. Everybody, we can do it now.
I love that. I love that. And actually, that kind of is very similar and kind of leads in. And that's the thing. It's all of these things are so nuanced and meshed together. I don't think you can have, like, a hard black and white, good, bad, because, like, it's impossible to do that, because it's all involving humans and humans are messy. But I think that leans into that, like, kind of, again, about accountability and stuff like that. That kind of, now again, very almost like academic question, but you know, the whole concept of the death of the author, like, you know, as it, I'm loving your grin at that. It's brilliant. If the viewers can't, the listeners can't see it, but I'm loving it.
Fangs are out.
Yes, you're like, I'm ready to eat into this meat now. But I'm just wondering, do you think that kind of concept does apply to horror films in the sense that it links into kind of like censorship and accountability? And like, let's say, you know, they're the kind of tried and tested examples, but your Roman Polanski's or your Victor Salva's, you know, the type of thing of like, once the film is made, once it exists, do you think that like any connection to the person who's made it is severed? It's now just in the hands of the viewers? Or do you think there is some kind of accountability in the sense that, no, this film was made by that piece of shit person, therefore it shouldn't be engaged with? Like, what, or not shouldn't, because you can't, but, you know, it should be critically engaged with.
Yeah, either critically engaged with, or perhaps, yeah, you're right not to say shouldn't, but at the very least, I would not encourage you to do so.
Yes.
Based on your personal opinions on the matter. Because, yeah, there are people who are going to be like, hey, I know that this person's a piece of shit, but I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I don't agree with that attitude, but it's their right to have it, you know? I'm not going to try to tell people how they can think or feel. You can't do that. And it's not, I think people get confused, too. When I say that you can't do that, I'm not telling you, like, what you're allowed to do. I'm telling you what you literally are incapable of doing. Like, you cannot do it. You can want it all you want. You could oppress people, but you can't really do anything about how they think or feel. I have massive stage fright, and I've been a performer since I was 16 years old. And it's kind of the only way I got over being a really, really shy person and terrified of everybody around me. Emo kid, goth kid, whatever they called it by the time I was graduating. I just hated everything. Hated myself, hated everybody. And I think that it wasn't until I was really acting and getting into the skin of other people and then add that kind of mentality to learning a script the way you would to learning academia. That thing is, when you're an actor, you have to really dig sometimes into yourself, because you have questions about a character and you're like, I don't get how anybody, this doesn't seem realistic to me at all. And you know, it takes a good director then to kind of remind you, like, make it realistic. And it's not like your acting has to be better. It's the good acting is, so what part of you agrees with this? And you go, oh, I don't want to do that. They're like, if you did though, what performance could you give us? And it doesn't mean you condone it. It's
like, find that ugly, putting yourself in that mindset almost.
Yeah, we're all toxic. We're humans. So find your toxicity in a controlled way. But that's some scary shit to do, because you also need to understand yourself without the toxicity. So the insecurities and all. So through doing that, I think that's where a lot of my attitude comes from. But I do feel that the concept of the death of the author has been wildly misconstrued over the years, even in universities.
Ooh, interesting. Spicy take.
An observational take, sadly. I've had too many teachers that don't agree. And so they're reading these texts from different eyes and perspectives, so you have status quo of like, well, this is how we've always understood it since like the 60s. And then you have others who are like, maybe you read the translation wrong, you know. Sometimes it's from France and Germany and it's not as clear-cut as the translators might have made it. So rereading some of this, like, my idea with death of the author isn't so much that there is, they are immune to your bullshit. That's not really what the death of the author is. It's more so like, when you ask this question to me, this is where my brain goes. I immediately have a question. Like I said, be curious. So I can't properly answer it unless I know what you mean, which I have an idea what you mean, so I could just answer it. But just for the sake of argument.
Oh, yeah. No, go for it. Yeah, unpick
like
it.
Out in the field, if you don't know somebody and you're having this conversation, instead of being kind of a dick and just like, oh, this is this way because it's the way I know it, these are the questions you can ask. So if you're asking me, how do I feel about death of the author, are you also considering the context of my engagement with it, whether I like the product and certain aspects of the product? or are we talking about supporting people involved that have caused harm?
Yes, because they're two very different questions.
There's a consumership question, and then there's an art engagement question.
Yes.
Have the same concept thrown into it.
I know what you mean, yeah. I think where I'm kind of coming from is probably more the, you know... Well, it's asking another question, because, like, is your art engagement, like, as in, I'm just, you know, it's the art that I have a connection with. Is your art engagement, therefore, by and by, also in some way kind of going, but I'm engaging with this art because I don't have as much issue with this really shitty person. You know, it's like, it's
true, but okay, this is where I find the subtlety comes into play, because that is engagement that turns into consumership. That is
right.
I've turned off my ethical brain to do whatever I want. YOLO, bro. You know, that's kind of how the person's treating whoever's saying that.
Yeah,
and that's fine. I mean, if that's you, I don't do that. But
yeah.
I'm not your parent either. I don't really care to raise you, and I'm not going to say that you're a bad person. I want to make that clear, and I mean this with no sarcasm. Like, that doesn't make you a bad person. It makes you different than my moral stance. That's all. However, I do think that it is important to at least address it to yourself and not run away from it and have that knee-jerk response of like, I'll do what I want. You can't tell me what to do. I'm like, I asked you a question. I didn't, you know, I'm challenging you. I'm not judging you yet. You know, I'm starting to, because of the way this conversation's going, you know, that's kind of how it goes. And I feel that I would never judge someone. Say, I think Victor Salva is kind of the best example we have. Even with Polanski, people can make really non-relevant arguments, but they can be made. With Victor Salva, I'm just like,
they're...
you did that to an actor on a set. Like, that is just a predatory director. So,
yeah.
Okay. So here we have, say, Jeepers Creepers is the prime example of this. Does my disdain for Victor Salva make it okay and fair for me to evaluate the film negatively just because he made it? There's probably like 200 other people who made it too. So am I going to dog the cinematographer and the actors, and what am I going to dog them about? Like, what am I criticizing here? Am I going to be like, yeah, nobody involved is really worth a damn anyway? Like, maybe on a moral level, I can get behind that. So when I hear people say things like that, at least in my circles, I know what they mean. They usually mean like, oh, they have a moral issue that I don't really want to mess with.
Yes.
So that's just a personal decision that a lot of people make of like, I'm just not really comfortable kind of dealing with people who don't think before they do things. So then, you know, yeah, you might have a cast in like Jeepers Creepers 3 that'll be like, so for all of you, money was more important than keeping the young members of staff safe, is what you're saying. Or maybe you were there to keep the young members of staff safe because the movie was going to happen anyway. I don't know. There's assumptions you can make.
Yeah.
But what I can say is, fuck Victor Salva. I ain't buying that movie ever. You're not getting a cent from me to watch these freaking movies. I don't care if they are as good as like everybody's quintessential favorites. Like Jeepers Creepers 3 could have been as earth-shattering and cinema-changing as something like Nope. And I don't care because he's not getting my money. It's as simple as that. I, as a consumer, get to decide who gets a piece of that little bit of money that I have. And I have it with J.K. Rowling.
Yep.
Regardless of somebody's views on the entire sports argument, bitch fight, whatever, a little bit of fight that everybody's having with J.K. Rowling, I just kind of feel like, I don't know, I was already tired of Harry Potter before it was, like, really painful and traumatizing, so...
Yeah, I was already tired of it before it was associated with a raging transphobe, you know, that just, you know, compounds it more. just very slight tangent, but I just love how... Just specifically because it came up, but I love how it's like, because of Rowling being so turfy and like very loud about it, so many more people have like realized actually how just overly problematic the books were the entire time, which I kind of think is hilarious in the way that she's like, so, because she's like, oh, like, so this basically a big raging transphobe, because of that everyone else has realized, oh, actually you're also kind of anti-Semitic, you're also pretty racist, like everything else that's problematic that people might have glossed over before, and now it's like all out in the open. I just think that's just like, I love that bittersweet irony. I'm just like, I can eat it up.
She is, and I use this word with all of the venom and bile that I could possibly give, so normative. Is how I feel about writers and people like J.K. Rowling. It's boring.
Mm-hmm.
It's lazy. I don't care if you were able to write sentences in a snappy, catchy way. There are plenty of non-shitty people who can do that.
Yep.
There are plenty of shitty people who did it better, you know? So, like, and that's the thing. Like, I don't mind a problematic person making art and it having become famous if we can read that art in a way that is helpful for others. And Harry Potter was one of those things that at first I had my emotional knee-jerk responses of like, you just need to stop paying this person.
Yeah.
And I still feel that way. Any new product, I'm like, why are you buying this video game? Why are you getting involved in, you know, like, imagine if we had all these sorts of scandals and things about George R.R. Martin. We're already not interested in House of the Dragon necessarily. Some are, and if you are, I don't mean to like make fun of you, but I'm saying for those of us who weren't, there are enough of us who already weren't without really knowing much about the person who made it.
Exactly. There was no big reason to be like, avoid this person and anything new that is associated.
Yeah. So I think the complexity of the situation is like, is the author truly dead in a horror film?
Mm-hmm.
I often feel that it really depends on the film, for one. For instance, okay, I'll name a movie where I think the author can be easily just, I don't know, shot in the face with a shotgun and didn't really make the movie. And ready for a hot take? Beetlejuice is not good because of Tim Burton.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is a lot of iconic shit in there from Tim Burton. I'm not going to deny that. His artistry is all over the place. And it is what initially draws everybody in.
Mm-hmm.
Beetlejuice is amazing because of Winona Ryder, Gina Davis, Catherine O'Hara, Alec Baldwin, and everybody else's names who I sadly cannot remember off the top of my head. But like that cast of professional comedians, improvisers, and getting this wackadoodle script, and just Catherine O'Hara will do anything that you tell her to do.
What a woman!
Gina Davis will always kick ass.
Yeah.
And Winona Ryder, I mean, she was just doing what the script told her to do, and I'm sure Tim Burton was a very, you know, comforting director around kids, because let's face it, his biggest problem is he just needs to get out of his white privileged teenage phase.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think a lot of us have gone through that, and you know, that toxicity just has to kind of be weaned out sometimes, and he never did. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things to where there was a time that I'd be like, don't come after Tim. Tim's like the my whole childhood. And I look back on it and I'm like, I love the crap out of this movie. And it's got some weird pedo kind of stuff in there. And at the same time, I always felt that was kind of the point. Beetlejuice is not like a hero of any.
Exactly. Time. You're not actually supposed. He is monstrous. Like, that's almost the entire point.
She failed miserably. Lydia, run away. Like, that's kind of the point. It's a girl who is dealing with a predator, even in death. You can't escape these incel-y assholes. That's kind of the thing to me.
What a grim image. Even in death, you can't escape the incels. Oh, no.
I mean, that whole scene, his whole introduction with Gina Davis and everything, like, it just shows, like, okay, yeah, but that's the whole point. They set him up the entire movie to be like, oh, no, he's been fired from literally everything because he's just not a good person.
Yeah.
And so what I'm getting at, though, is, like, I'm not saying Tim Burton had nothing to do with any of it. Of course it wouldn't look the way it did. Of course it wouldn't, you know, feel the way it did. But, like...
But those performances and everything came from those actors.
And Danny Elfman. Like, there's just such a combination of things. Like, you know, you could strip away every bit of the Tim Burton-esque stuff in there and just have another director who's like, I want to make it look kind of like a German expressionist movie and get a fairly similar movie out of it, I think, with who was making it.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. And I think that's going to very similar, like, going to link to the question. I think, like, as you said, the, you know, is the author dead? I think it really depends on the film and the filmmaker. Like, for one other example, like, take the entire Chucky franchise with Don Mancini. Like, even when he was not even the director, but just the writer, but from the first Child's Play all the way through to the Chucky TV series, Don Mancini's been the creative force behind it. And his vision, his queerness is just embedded into that story, so you can't separate it because it is his, like, I don't know, his spirit, I guess, whatever, is just flowing through that entire franchise. Which, oh, yeah. I think in that sense you couldn't say, because it, like, you can't separate Child's Play, Chucky from Don Mancini. They're almost so intricately linked. And I just, again, similar to that Beetlejuice bit where it's like, you know, I don't know, they throw that in there deliberately because you're not supposed to root for him. I love how, like, in the very, again, slight tangent, but in the Chucky TV series, Don Mancini kind of almost subverts and flips that, whereas, like, you know, you've got, you know, Jake kind of going, like, talking with Chucky, and Chucky says, hey, I, like, you know, I have a gender-fluid kid, and Jake is like, what, you're okay with that? And he's like, Jake, I'm not a monster! And I love how that's just... Exactly. He just subverts and flips that, so you're like, oh, he's actually not that bad, when he's deliberately playing with Jake. But yeah, tangent. But yes, I think it really depends on the filmmaker and the film, if you can have that separation, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes it easier to decide, is there, can you have that art engagement, and that art engagement isn't a vocal support of that creator? Because I think, you know, I've seen, you know, I wish I hadn't, but I've seen it in the past before I knew all about it, but, you know, the first kind of Jeepers Creepers, you know, and I kind of think when you rewatch a film like that after knowing what's come out about the person who's made it, I don't know if it's like because you know what's happened, you're seeing things that you might not have picked up on before, but I kind of feel like there's certain shots, certain things like that, that are pretty creepy, like, kind of like making you kind of uncomfortable. And so I wonder if that, you know, if your engagement with those films, in a way, I don't think you can separate it from someone who is as repulsive as Victor Salva.
Well, and it's also, it's in the details. So,
yes.
I mean, yes, sometimes I think we are just putting two and two together and maybe making a narrative in our minds that, like, you know, I heard an interview with Rachel Tulele from Freddy's Dead, and she worked really early on. I think she was already working on their team. I don't know if it was with the original Nightmare or if it was starting with Nightmare 3, but she was talking about Craven's creative process and how when you are making the effects and the kills and on all that good stuff, that she's like, you would think that, you know, people like to act how he was this really scholarly, well thought out person, and he was in his private life. I mean, outside of his interactions with her, I mean, it's known that his writing process and preparation process did go through a lot of that alone, because that's his thing. Once he's on set, though, she's like, no, it's just us really just joking around and seeing, like, what would make me go, like, oh, holy shit, and how do we make this cooler? And exactly the feeling that you get from the movies.
Yeah.
Because that was their goal. That is why Freddy's Dead works the way it works, is because Rachel Tulele wanted to go and make a movie that really was just sensation.
Mm-hmm.
That was just Freddy Krueger sensation stuff, and see how just over-the-top fun and weird they can make it, and it, like it or not, you know? But there was this... You could tell when Wes was touching the film himself, like, on, like, a keyboard and putting it together, because there is this contemplative, what really scares you kind of question in the back of these movies, that you're always kind of like, man, Freddy's some fucked up shit, man. I don't know what he would do to me. I don't want to know. Like, how deep can you get into somebody's fears? Like, Wes Craven's New Nightmare explores that intricately. So I think it's kind of like... that's where I can see the DNA of Wes Craven so much.
Yeah.
You know, these tiny subtleties, callbacks, things like that. Victor Salva, on the other hand, has a tendency to create, and let's be honest, is recreating this one property now,
mm-hmm.
an entity that is misunderstood by society by being different and more evolved than them, who comes and creeps on people, literally called the Creeper, and drags them down into a hole to suck out their eyes and skin them in a very weird trench-coated big van pervy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why all this classic pervert imagery was in it, and it's not like a campy, funny yeah. John Waters kind of thing. Like, I think if you had had more of a self-awareness, like, yeah, you were doing this to make you uncomfortable, mm-hmm. there would have been a bit of a wink in those movies. But they're dreary as hell. They're
yeah,
dark
it's very
as
just
fuck.
Straight.
Yeah, and because of that, that's where I start to, you know, it's the same thing I said earlier in the whole, like, why did you have to be so accurate? Why
mm-hmm.
do you know this so well?
Yeah. You know?
Why does this feel like this is your calling card?
You know? Yeah, what are you revealing to us?
yeah. I will also say on the whole concept of the death of the author, though, mm-hmm. it also comes down to, like, what are you thinking about? What are you trying to understand?
Because yeah.
Yeah, you need to take the author out of the equation if you want to look at the filmography. You need to take the author out of the equation if you want to look at box office results.
Yeah.
If you want to follow, is it Justin Long who's in it?
Mm-hmm, yep.
Follow his career, and if it's on there, that's up to you if you're like, I have a moral thing, I don't want to watch this movie. But if you're like, I'll pirate it for this podcast or something, and or even if you're like, I don't mind, I'll watch it because I'm thinking about Justin, I'm not thinking about Victor Salva.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Like, there are things that you can keep in mind, and I also feel like you can totally be objective while still pointing out the elephant in the room.
Mm-hmm.
I love when YouTubers and podcasters do that, when they really point out, like, well, you know, it is created by a known sexual like offender and convicted whatever, which makes this a really difficult one for me to review. However, that having been said, here's some elements that other people did a really good job in. So
mm-hmm.
like
yeah.
you can totally ignore the nasty person by just not giving them any of your time.
Yeah, exactly.
Just
ignore
their part.
100%. And I think that's like, at the end of the day, I think that's where I kind of most of the time would probably, you know, plant my own flag as well, because like, as you said, you know, at the start of this kind of like and specific and topic, but you know, films and stuff like that, they're collaborative projects, you know, like some, you know, small budget indie films could just be literally one person makes the entire thing. Mm-hmm. But like the bigger you go budget wise, you know, it's a collaboration, so, you know, not everyone is responsible necessarily for what's happened. Now, I'm definitely very much kind of the opinion that once, you know, it's in the kind of zeitgeist that, hey, this person's a shitty person, and, like, it's been confirmed, and then you choose to work, you know, I'm kind of like, then I kind of go, yeah, you know what, then I kind of think that's a choice. Like, yeah, you know,
I
yes...
know about.
Yeah, exactly. Like, then, you know, yes, I know, especially if in the creative industry, you know, a lot of time jobs can be hard to come by and people need to feed their families and stuff like that. But there's a line, like, you know, there is a line where you can kind of personally kind of go, yeah, I get it. You know, money is money. You need to support your kids, but you still chose to work with this person, so I'm going to tap it, you know. But I think that everyone can make that personal decision themselves. And yeah. Will I judge someone who chooses to support and engage with a project attached to someone that's problematic? Probably no, but I'll also take my distance, you know, like, I'll be like, you know what, I'm less likely to kind of allow you to come into my circles. Am I going to judge you for engaging? No, because people can engage with what they want, like, you know. Like, at the end of the day, that's, you know, take the subgenre of, like, you know, extreme cinema and extreme horror. Like, for some people, engaging with that is a cathartic experience for them to deal with trauma they've had, you know? So I'm not going to say you can't watch these films or this genre shouldn't exist. You know, I'm never going to do that. But, you know, if some people have displayed some form of red flags, I'm going to be like, you know what? I'm not allowing you in my circle anymore. I'm putting that boundary in place. But yeah, but complete separate tangent, but it's something I'm always interested in when it comes to horror fans, because I think it's something like someone who's a non-horror fan, they hear this question, they kind of go, huh? What? But do you have any like specific comfort horror films, as in what are your go-to, like if you've had a shitty day, a shitty week, what film or films would you be like, you know what, I'm going to watch this one because I know I'm going to have a good time with it?
So for me, I have like multiple types of comfort films,
because
I have the kind that indeed are just there for me to like unwind. Most of them are comfort films because I can easily just not pay attention to them. I know them really well. So sometimes the, you know, criteria for it really shifts, because there are these films that I'm like, not a pleasant viewing experience, but I don't have to experience it either. I could just have it on the background just to have the movie on. But there are others that I think, like, sometimes I do get the comfort from just like going through an emotion that somebody else is having that's the same as what I'm having. And so it like keeps you from, if you're feeling too vulnerable or too weak at that moment to really, maybe even just too petty to go through like a certain, you know, self-awareness check or something, that you know how you feel, how you should be behaving. Sometimes watching a movie can really make you go, I'm gonna learn from that, you know.
Yeah,
and those can be comforting to me. So one of those, I had the joy and pleasure of getting to discuss this on the Psychoanalysis podcast, that was The Witch. It's one of the movies for me. Just that one is very much a like trauma comfort movie, so it is frustrating as hell for me to watch it sometimes, because I'm just like, these fucking Christian people, like, Puritans. I'm like, come on, Black Phillip, let's go. So that's kind of that movie for me, because I'm just like, that's right. You all see a scary ending, and I see, like, get it.
Yeah, you're just like, good for her. Good for Black Phillip.
Oh, even worse than good for her, I'm like, win me. Like,
yeah.
Let me in. So there's that, and I would say a very recent one actually for me that I just think is just a vibe. I just vibe with this one. It's Come True. I don't know if you've seen that one. It's a 2020 film.
I haven't seen it, but I think it's on Shudder, isn't it? I think, or no.
I don't think it's on Shudder.
I think I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
I know it's available in physical because I have a Blu-ray, so you can.
Oh, nice, nice.
Physical media. Thank goodness. Thank you, Anthony, for doing that. but I, yeah, off the top of my head, I'm not too sure which streaming services.
Oh, hey, yeah.
Google's your friend.
So, yep.
Come True, 2020, Anthony Scott Burns. Check it out. It is a very interesting kind of pseudo sci-fi horror film, but it's really light on the sci-fi. It's more like it takes sci-fi aesthetic and imagery to tell more of a cerebral vibing kind of horror thing. So for me, it's like, if you were to take the subtle chill vibes that Cronenberg can kind of give sometimes and throw that into like a Silent Hill kind of vibe.
Oh, interesting.
It's going into somebody's dreams and nightmares and stuff. So they're just some really nice kind of just chill out kind of moments that are terrifying. If you've ever had sleep paralysis, it's a very like, oh, I know this feeling kind of a movie.
Okay.
And I just think that I just dig the vibe. I really do. It's really like sleepy kind of movie because it's all about sleep. So other than that, you know, giallo films I'm going to go to. Like, whenever I get sick, like bad sick, like stuck in the bed or something, I remember the two times I've had COVID, I ended up just sweating in bed, lying there, not able to move, watching old, trashy horror movies. So the more smutty and just wildly inappropriate for the time, as well, I would do a little research and was like, did anybody actively get assaulted or anything in this movie? No, they all enjoyed it. Yeah,
perfect. I'm going to throw it on.
Yeah, just, you know, when it's like, well, I didn't want to be a porn director, but, you know, I got to to make my art. I'm like, yeah, I want to watch some of that while I'm kind of feeling down, just because I feel like that is a carnal part of not everybody. You know, there are plenty of asexual people and on the ace spectrum that I don't want to like erase here. But I'm just saying, for many of us, I think it's just a carnal part of if you are sexually driven and active in that way, that you're kind of like repressing that a lot. And I'm like, there's no shame in just watching a bunch of people be their horny little selves and kill each other. It's fine.
Totally. And blood. Exactly. Brilliant. And also, this was like a perfect transition into one of the questions, like, which is something that I am always like interested in, because it's just something it feels that I'm noticing it as the films and TV shows that are being put out over the last number of years. It just seems to be becoming more and more apparent. But to me, anyway, horror at least seems to be maybe the only kind of genre that doesn't seem to be falling victim to kind of the mass desexualization and sanitization of the type of media we're getting. Like, now, maybe that's just the type of films I'm watching, I'm not sure. But, like, if you look at, you know, like, and again, I'm a fan of, like, you know, the MCU films, the Marvel films, I'm a comic book nerd, I like them. But at the end of the day, they're not sexy. Like, there's no sex appeal at all.
I wish they would be, though, because the comics are so horny.
Right? Like, that's what I mean, but there's even the fact that in the Eternals film, they had a sex scene. It was not sexy. Like, there's nothing sexual about the Marvel films. They're all bland and basically, like, you know, Ken dolls. But so much of the media we're getting, even if they have sex scenes, feel, I don't know, somehow sanitized or desexualized compared to kind of what used to be made back in the day. And I want to know, like, do you think horror is, like, kind of subverting that trend and trying to be like, no, we're not going to sanitize ourselves? Or do you think horror is also falling victim to it? I don't know. Like,
okay.
Yeah, it's a weird one.
You've opened up a door here. I would like to address one tangent before answering this direct question.
Mm-hmm. Yep, go ahead.
Because you mentioned the MCU stuff. And it's just because I feel that anybody who's listening, if you have an opinion on MCU movies, I just want this to be out there somewhere. And that is, I think the big reason that it bothers us so much with the MCU movies, how cookie cutter and sterile and stuff they all are, mm-hmm. is the fact that these movies aren't made for us. They're not made for the adults that grew up with Saturday morning cartoons and adult properties like in the comics. They are Saturday morning cartoons made into movies for kids to watch with their families, and for their families to go, it feels right. They're getting accurate costumes. They're bringing in storylines from the comics, altering them to make it a little bit more generally acceptable, because Disney's got to make some money.
Mm-hmm.
And I get if you don't like it, they don't care. And they're not making it for you then. They're making it for people who just want to see their favorite characters come to life and have something that they can take their little child to go see and not go, am I going to have to be concerned about the questions that I need to answer right now?
Yes.
Am I going to have to deal with nightmares? And I think they do a pretty decent job of kind of warning you about those things, because I would say, like, the sexiest movie they've made so far was probably Black Widow, and that's not that sexy of a movie, but it's just because it's a very empowering movie.
Yes.
And therefore, you can kind of feel that especially the women in the movie, you're like, yeah, I get a vibe from you. I can see what you're up to and who you are a little bit. And if you're an adult, you're kind of like, I get you. And it's not like all the characters, because that's another thing. They're also trying to make them enough of a blank slate that you feel represented when you're watching them. That has kind of been a big
part
of the comics in general. That people saw themselves in the thousands of characters that existed.
Exactly.
Well, we have about 80 right now, so we have to meet a lot of demands for less content. So we're getting there. I think that they're trying really hard, and like, okay, now that we're getting through the kid-friendly stuff, maybe we will get some really horny Fantastic Four characters. At the very least, please make the X-Men, like, just so stupidly horny. Like, it just needs to be really Pretty Little Liars with powers and stuff. Screw Hogwarts. If Jessica Rowling can make a sexier product, that's an issue to me, because X-Men has always been just way sexier and horny. Anyway, so that aside,
I love that tangent though.
But it does tie into what I want to get here, because, like, do I feel that it's immune to it? I actually think that it's just been a very subtle trend, and it really depends on who's making it and where is it going. Because I think if you're talking about a studio production, and I don't mean a movie made by somebody who wanted to make that movie and maybe they get carte blanche because they're, like, studio rich, like a Cronenberg or a Jordan Peele or something. I'm talking about a movie that they say, hey, we're shopping the script. and you're a director in our pipeline. Mm. Will you make the movie? That kind of a studio project where the studio is making the damn movie. Halloween 2018, I think, is a very good example. Like, they're going to resurrect this. Blumhouse got the rights. Who's going to do? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that that was probably a little bit more, like, kind of coming together infusing, but I would say that's somewhere in that half range where, like, it has to appeal to a wider audience. It's a
yes. property.
But say, look at all of James Wan's work.
Mm-hmm.
Saw's kind of sexy, though.
Oh, yeah, Saw is
sweaty, it's dingy, it's a lot of man-on-man eye contact, you know, like...
a lot of homoeroticism happening, bubbling under the surface.
Yeah, and I mean, and if I'm sure there are plenty of people who are like, I know that you're in mortal danger, but, like, you can chain me to the wall, it's fine. You know, like, so, I'm sure you can find some sexiness to it if you wanted to. And it's because it's so dirty, right? Sex is taboo. The more taboo a movie is, the more we're kind of like, I'm feeling a little...
Exactly. It's like the more it kind of transgresses against, like, and going back to what your damning criticism of Rowling, anything that kind of transgresses against norms in some way is going to be more raunchier and more hornier because it's more taboo. So I think, yeah, I think there is something about... like, you know, the Saw films, even the more, like, elaborate, intricate storyline ones that, like, have so much going on that you need to be paying attention to figure out what's going on, even those ones have, like, something under the current where it's just like, yeah, there's a little bit of something going on here.
Let's take a director like Taika Waititi. That, you know, the big discourse that we had around the new Thor movie, and I have not seen it, so I cannot give you my opinion on whether I feel this is accurate or not.
Mm.
So, but I'm just talking about a general discourse about him and his work then.
Yeah.
Is the fact that, you know, people are asking, like, is it really gay, though? Because you've made, just made, like, the gay pirate show and the very gender-fluid vampire show. So, what are we getting with this one? How gay is it going to be? And, you know, yes, what is the word I'm looking for here? Like queer baiting. That's it. It's not gay baiting. It's gay baiting, like queer baiting. Like, is it queer baiting? Because it's like, of course it's really gay, all this. And they're like, well, there's not really much gay representation in the film. There's like maybe like one, from what I've heard, there's like one scene where there's somebody like explicitly into somebody of the same sex, but implied more than like sticking his tongue down their throat kind of a scene. And I think that one thing you get there, though, is Taika Waititi is very queer in the production of his work, and very neurodivergent as well. That kind of goes hand to hand sometimes. But
there's always a lot of overlap.
And in this case, though, I think it's like, but it's not sexy. Mm-hmm. These are like he works with a lot of sexy people.
Oh,
but
for sure.
I don't think he can write sexy material. It's not, and I think that that also comes from people's understanding, especially if you are, you know, if we're talking gender and you're cis, it's kind of hard to understand how fetishizing gender still happens, even if you're very supportive of it and gender identity. And that's fine, because I mean, it's fine and it's not fine. It's like, it's fine if you are aware of it and you can then kind of better figure out your feeling of it. And of course, if anybody is like trans on any level and they're kind of like fetishizing it, it's like, well, they're feeling very fucking sexy and horny, let them. They're fetishizing themselves. And same thing kind of goes with like being gay. If you know, you can see gay culture from the outside of a window because you don't really know what that club is like. And you could be like, damn, I like that vibe. And then if you don't get it in a movie and you're like, well, that's not really gay, it's like, well, just because they're not like thirsting constantly doesn't mean that are you straight people constantly thirsting after each other? Is that what you're trying to tell me, that you can't have a sexual identity unless you are horny all the time? So and so that's where it's like, well, maybe the representation you get being subtle is fine, because we're still trying to make this material where that's not the point. It's the point is to tell this goofy story about Thor doing whatever adventure is coming about, and hey, we didn't shy away from those people kissing in the background. Like, that's that is as far as Disney's brave enough to do it. And in horror, I do feel we're getting that. I feel that I think it has a place. I think that, you know, if you're exploring sexuality and exploring discomfort and taboo, give me a Cronenberg any day. I want to see what fucked up stuff you've created about sex and the human body. However, again, a movie I have not seen, but from what I've heard, like Bodies, 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 I hear is a very... you have... people who are dressed very fashionably, and you might be attracted to them personally, but mm-hmm. the movie's not trying to make you do anything like that. They're just there. They are literally yep. bodies, bodies, bodies. It's just like what their purpose is in the film is to be characters in the film.
Yep.
So that's what this whole discourse about it has been, is, you know, somebody criticizing it based on kind of fetishizing the bodies in the film, and then when they get called out for it, they're like, oh no. And so I think that studio productions are going in that direction, but I would like to throw back at you then.
Yeah.
Do you really think it's all that new? Think about big budget horror movies from like the 90s on, and just think about the trend in what yeah. we've seen, and then think about where did you find the more sexualized graphic horror movies?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like, because like when you think about it, because like so much of the more, as you said, graphic ones were probably from like a lot of the time a fairly, this is a straight white man with a fetishistic lens who's made this, and it's probably veering into objectification and misogynistic territory. And as you know, things have kind of, society is quote unquote progress forward, we've kind of gone less into objectification for objectification's sake territory. But yeah, it's just something that I'm always thinking about, and about, you know, which influences which. Is it films and media that are influencing society and culture, or is it the other way around? Because like, I do think overall, as like in 2022 and over the last like decade or so, or not longer, like, it feels like we're becoming, I don't know, somehow more desexualized, as in sex isn't talked about as much. It's, you know, like, yeah, it's considered, it's feeling more taboo to be openly sexual and to talk about sex. And it's both because all our social media apps, so much of them, you can't be openly sexual on it because you'll get banned, it'll be reported, you have to be, you know, civil and respectable, and I think it's all just intricately linked. And this is something that, you know, I'm not going to solve on a podcast, but it's something that I'm like, when I'm watching films, I'm just always, I want to know which is influencing which. Is it the films have gradually, over the last like, you know, 20-odd, 30-odd years, become less openly sexual, and therefore society's responding to that? Or is it society's becoming a little bit less openly sexual and films are representing that? I just don't know. It's something I'm always trying to unpick. But while you're ruminating on that, I do, like, it's something that, just when you're talking about, like, the type of, you know, is it queerbaiting, is it not queerbaiting, the type of representation we get, it's something, again, that I'm always, like, you know, for me, like, I'd rather have like a very minimalistic something just in the background, but it makes you feel happy kind of representation, than visibly, this is a film about queer trauma. Cause I'm just like, you know, that's what our real world is. I don't want to see that in a film. Like, I don't, you know, I'd rather a film that's more coded, but has like a positive slant, than something that's openly, this is a queer film, but you're going to sit through some shit and it's going to be traumatic. Because I'm just like, that's what I get in my day-to-day life. You know, I don't want to see that represented on screen. Like, I'd rather have less accurate representation, but it makes me feel fucking happy, than accurate representation that makes me feel shit because the world makes me feel shit. You know?
Yeah, there you go. And I think that is exactly where the studios, or at least a lot of studios' minds are, because, like, what's going to sell better? A bunch of trauma baiting and just compounding everybody's negative emotions into 2 hours. They're looking at it from a consumer perspective. And I think that's another, like, so what I was also getting at, because you're on the money when it comes to, you know, the types of people making those sorts of films. But I'm also getting at the production of it. So if you just think about market trends, things like this, like, it makes sense to me that if you are trying to make a lot of money and get as many people to see something as possible, you are going to avoid all of the hot button red flag things that you can put into it so that you don't piss off this camp, this camp, this camp, this camp. Am I personally in favor of that? No, I would not write, or I would not run a company that way. Mm-hmm. I would run a company and be like, I have my crowd. I have people who appreciate what I do, and I am open to feedback and critique and learning and growing.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, you do get a lot of, oh, I do things my way, and then it's a very stubborn attitude behind it. But what I'm kind of getting at as well is it's mainly like the indie sphere that you're seeing more of that, because the, like I mentioned before, you're getting these directors and writers who just made something that they were feeling at the time.
Yeah.
So it's far more akin to just like an Edgar Allan Poe, you know, poem or short story, because he's like, I don't feel good and I wrote it down and this is kind of my emotions right now. And then, you know, hundreds of years later, here we are, and they're still getting printed by major publications when they weren't when he was alive.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're seeing with a lot of films, too. These deep, philosophical, traumatic movies. Then they pop up on the Criterion Collection or something. Or A24 grabs them, or Shutter grabs them. But then Blumhouse is not all about that. Every now and then we get one of those movies. But usually it's like, we'll get a freaky that is way smarter than you ever thought it was going to be.
What a film.
But it's meant to make you really chill and excited and have some fun. But then the dialogue just throws some real shit at you constantly. Mm-hmm. It's like, like, Nope, I think is a great one. Like, you know, so we can talk from the perspective of being queer, but being white, you know, we can't necessarily...
Exactly,
we can relate in that we can relate to the reactions in the room from people of color. But of course, like, we can historically learn and know people's struggles, but not necessarily embody it the way that other people do.
Yeah.
But I do listen to all of my, you know, friends and stuff who are not white and who talk about how they also don't want to just be like trauma dumped constantly in their media.
Yeah.
And so Nope was just such this elation for just about everybody watching it was just a fucking fun movie.
Exactly. Like, that was my favorite thing about it. It was just like my favorite thing was like coming out of the film, like there was like a group of three people in front of me because I saw it in the cinema last week. And I just loved how, like, they were walking down the stairs the entire time. They were just, like, trying to, like, you know, what was it about? They were trying to unpack it. And my takeaway was, like, I kind of think Jordan Peele was just fucking with people. I think he was just like, you know what? I'm just going to make a straight-up fun sci-fi film. Because people are expecting me to have a film that has a big message. Like, yes, underneath it there were messages, of course, because it's Jordan Peele. Exactly. But it wasn't like a Get Out where it's overt, you know, something like that. And
it's
Exactly. And I just loved that because people were trying to unpack it. And I'm just like, it was kind of just a good, fun movie for everyone to have fun with. But there was stuff going on as well at the same time.
Exactly. It's complex. You can totally unpack like a lot of academic thought in it. I mean, the word spectacle screamed at me. It's very post-Marxist stuff in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, means of production's kind of thrown in there as well. Film history is in there. But it's also, like, I love the educational stint to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's what I love about that film is that this is how I think a film treats educating its audience the best is it's like you could I think Get Out was a necessary film to do it that way.
Yes.
It's like, is this you kind of a movie? but I love how Nope is more like, if you know, you know.
Mm-hmm. Kind of film. Yeah.
And yet you'll still understand it if you don't know those little things. You won't be laughing at the same stuff,
mm-hmm.
but you will at the very least understand this family, their struggle, this alien, this problem. And that's as much as I'm going to say about it in case somebody hasn't seen it.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, these elements are pretty A to B to C to D. It makes sense, but then through it, through the dialogue and just through some little cutaways here and there, it's very Jordan Peele work that you're expecting. And, you know, no, there's no, like, yes, there's a point to it, but there's no point to it if you don't want it to be there. It's not like this movie's always
exactly
going to make you feel that way. And I agree with you that I also look for that in representation now as well, because who gives a shit about always being reminded, like, your life and the life of people like you kind of suck, right? Like,
I'm just like, yep, I'm quite aware. Yeah.
Thank you for reminding me that it's just going to stay the same and we're just going to be sad. One quick,
Go continue from where you're going. Yeah. Yeah,
cool. So what I'm wanting to get at with this is that I don't necessarily see it as good, bad, whatever. It's a thing. Mm-hmm. I see where it can be logical to do this. Again, using Nope as an example, I would not say that was a very transgressive movie in any way. Mm-hmm. It didn't do anything to really... It was exhilarating more than anything else. You know, it shows mm-hmm. a different kind of horror to play with, and one that was still kind of fun to mess around with. And I'm a fan of all of that stuff, and I like when somebody's good at it and has a point. So, yeah, I'm not a fan of if you were to take, like, a very studio-minded director and then put that stuff into the film just to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a huge fan of the new Halloween movies because I do feel like it's, like, I like blood and guts and all that, but I fail to connect to the movie for some reason. I just see it as a sequence of events, and I'm happy for everybody who wants that because you got what you wanted.
Yeah.
Not for me, for what I wanted out of that, and that's fine. I have the original movie that I can chill out with and watch and get scared from a more cerebral side.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yep.
not the dude with the knife that ever scared me. It was the fact that I didn't understand him.
Yes, yeah.
So I just kind of feel like when it comes to cap off a lot of this, I don't think censorship is ever really the right answer, but I will say if somebody is calling for a movie to be removed from like a streaming service mm-hmm. and it's beyond, I just don't like it. If it really has a point of say like, well, we, and it also has to be more than, well, this person was a dick on Twitter. You know, like I really mean like, no, they're actively supporting campaigns to hurt particular demographics of people,
yeah.
You know, that they're abusive in their life. Like, you know, if they're like an Ezra Miller, something like that,
mm-hmm.
I
yeah.
really feel then what you have is less an engagement with an art form or with art and more of a consumer response to something and people
yes.
just telling you what they want to do with their money. And they have that right.
Yeah.
And you have that right to disagree with them. It's fine. Everybody just realize that not everybody's going to agree with you, and anybody who treats you like you're straight up a bad person because they disagree with you is not, they're wrong. They're not right in that. However, before you jump to the conclusion that that's what they're doing, please listen to their arguments just to
mm-hmm.
see if maybe you can just fess up and own up. Like, I acknowledge all of these things, and I still can't help that. For instance, I loved Jeepers Creepers when it came out.
Yeah.
I'm not ashamed to say that. I thought it was a cool movie. And then it's just when I heard
yeah,
about
same,
you
yeah.
know, Salva, I was just like, yep, that's that movie. Yep.
yep.
Well, never mind then. And they're just like, ugh, just kind of turned it off, you know? It's like, it's how the word moist has been ruined by many a person. It used to just be the way sponges were, and now it's like, don't say moist.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep, I know what you
That's
mean.
That's how I feel. About that.
That's how I feel about moist. Yep, no, I get you. But, but no, 100%. I think, ultimately, that's really what it is. And not just for, like, you know, engaging with horror films and other horror fans, but just across the board, engaging with other people who might have different viewpoints to you is kind of like, try and approach, you know, as you said, be curious, you know, try and approach it from the stance of like, unless you've been given verifiable proof that this person is actually hateful towards you, maybe kind of like be curious about where they're coming from, you know, and same vice versa. If more people were curious about other perspectives, everything would probably be less shitty, you know, and that's both for trying to engage with the horror community on Twitter and also just across the board engaging with humans. But to start to tie us up and wrap us up, this is a question that I always like to ask and I'm always interested in, but do you have any specific kind of favorite subgenres of horror? And I know some of them might overlap with your comfort films, but if there is specific subgenres that you particularly vibe with, is there a real reason why this is the genre that, or subgenre that is my bag, this is why I like this one?
So sometimes it overlaps.
Yeah.
But oddly enough, like, Is it weird to say that I think the things that I vibe with the most on like a creative level are not necessarily my favorite things to consume but it's my shit though.
Yeah. You know what
I mean? Like I understand it on such a visceral level that I really vibe with it, but sometimes that is not a good thing. Sometimes that's a very bad thing. It also means that I'm very picky about it too. So it's hard to have a favorite in the sense that, you know, a lot of people have favorites where they can just love it. And that's what they favorite. So for me, like those sorts of favorites, then it's like it's just trash movies. It's like it's, you know. And when I say trash, by the way, I don't mean it needs to go in the trash, because these are some wonderful artistic films too. And I do not want to like demean anybody who's made like old giallo films or 70s movies.
Yeah.
These movies rock. They are well made. They look beautiful most of the time too. And when they don't, I like them a little more. there's just something about the. I like a movie where I can feel a bunch of ideas and a fuck it just behind them thrown on the screen. But then I feel no maliciousness. I don't feel anything really icky. And if I do, I check it out. You know what I mean? Like sometimes it's like, hold on. Before I can determine if this is badass or not, I want to know if it's actually gross. So there is that element to some of those. But like, so yeah, Giallo is one for me. But honestly, body horror is kind of that's the stuff. Like, I don't gravitate towards it to watch it for pleasure.
Oh yeah,
but I definitely am engrossed and just gleefully sucked into how freaked out I am watching these movies. They get me. I maybe that's just because of my own like relationship with things like dysphoria and stuff. That it's just like the flesh. That idea, I'm just like, yeah, there's something really disturbing about like the making this really clinical investigation into consciousness and bodily and it's also a lot of the philosophy that I studied, so maybe it's just like hitting me on an intellectual level. Like, I don't know, are you familiar with phenomenology?
Oh, I'm just like, be still my broken heart. Yes. But no, like I very much would probably fall under like a, you know, Merleau-Ponty embodiment is kind of, that's my jam. So yeah, like that's why I think as well, body horror is one of those genres that it's always guaranteed to disturb me and creep me out. Yeah. So yeah, I seek it out, not from like, oh, this is going to like, you know, I'm going to have a good time. No, but it's more just like, I'm fascinated. Like I'm disturbed, grossed out, but I'm fascinated because like, so much of like my philosophical thinking on humans is that I do think we're embodied creatures. Like I'm like, fuck Descartes, we're not like some separate, like, you know, weird, I don't know, mind that's completely separate to a machinistic body. We're enmeshed in our body, we are our body. So that's why body horror grotesque, it grosses me out so much, because it's like, that is an entire person, that's happening to a person, like a character, you know. And it's just like, but yes, Merleau-Ponty, phenomenology, that's my jam.
If you don't know this theorist, this is just someone you should definitely check out, and that's Dylan Trigg, because...
Dylan Trigg was one of my lecturers in college.
I'm so freaking jealous.
I love Dylan Trigg.
He came to our university, I saw one symposium of his. I was so embarrassed because I accidentally grabbed the wrong book off the shelf for him to sign.
Oh.
So it was a contemporary of his from the same publishing house, that like the same thickness and everything.
Oh no.
Gosh, screw this up. But hey, I also have, like, I don't know if you've heard about Julian Heinrich, but he's my supervisor at my university.
Oh, okay, nice.
He does film phenomenology. It's why he brought him in. And I had a response like that on my own podcast recently. Somebody's like, oh my God, Heinrich is he taught me a lot of stuff. But Trigg blows my freaking mind. Like, it's such dark and understandable stuff. And I love just this exploration of what it means to be in this vessel that kind of like doesn't do what you want it to do, but it doesn't really have a will of its own either. And you're just like, could my dumb cow body, like, can I hurt it just a little bit? Like, can I be the shepherd to this animal? Because my consciousness knows exactly what I'm trying to do. And then even then your consciousness can like start to crap out on you. And you're just like, what's going on? Yeah. That part is like, to express that in horror is so pure, and I love it so much, because I think everybody can understand the fear of your body, whether it's your mind or the totality of your body behaving differently than you are doing, and to take that to the extreme is just where it's like, you have no option left. You have to understand this now. Like, if you don't get how horrible that is, you just don't have as much empathy as some other people, I guess.
Yep.
It should still be gross at the very least.
Yeah, you should at least be grossed out if you don't at least understand it on a kind of conceptual level. Yeah. But you should at least be grossed out.
Because I want to know. I want to know why you're liking this.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not going to yuck someone's yum, but I have questions.
You're into skin sliding off. Why? What's that?
And back to horny horror. But no. but yes, yes, I think... we are on very similar wavelengths with the type of films we vibe with and what we like to seek out. Yeah, I'm the same. I do love a completely, I can just take my brain out and leave it at the door type of horror film. But sometimes you just want to, jump in and just be, taken over by those kind of real visceral films as well. So, I think we're definitely vibing.
And I just want to say, to make the image really clear in people's minds, is I feel all those things that you're feeling, of course. I'm really shocked and grossed out and stuff. And when it happens, though, I'm the weird one in the room who's got that big grin on their face. And I start looking around the room to be like, I wonder how they're responding. I study this stuff on such a, you could easily get into a depression kind of level of understanding some of that philosophy.
Oh, yeah.
That when you see it applied, you're like, I already went through that part. But I am feeling it on such an aesthetic level that I'm very, very excited right now. You just kind of get this whole, I think some people are going through some stuff that I went through a long time ago. I do take some glee in the audience, participation of those sorts of films.
Oh, 100%. I think it's a similar vibe, very different, but also similar kind of feeling of that taking glee. Sometimes there are film, I just take great pleasure in knowing someone's watching a film that is probably not that great, kind of so bad, so good ones that, I just have great fun with, but there's a chance that they'll absolutely hate it. I kind of take great glee in knowing that I'm making someone watch something that is going to possibly not be a good time, just because it's I've convinced them to watch this piece of trash. Ha ha.
And now they know. They can now have an opinion on it.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. There are some films I could rant about this one for days because of how shit it is, but Verotica by Glenn Danzig, that is one of those films where I just need every single person to watch it just so that they can share in my pain.
That's a litmus test right there. It really is. You're sitting there I think it's a pretty good shit. It's hold on. I'm just going to stop the movie and just be like, I'm going to put on The Room just so we have a cinematic experience, okay?
Oh, yeah, that was a tough go. But but yes, I think that's a good litmus. Yeah, if you're looking, potential, potential partner, potential date person, before you get in bed with someone, watch this film. If they have a similar reaction to you, perfect. Let's get our clothes off. If they have an opposite reaction and enjoy it, okay, no, you can go home now.
At the very least, I want to have some pillow talk to understand what that response was, because maybe I'm into it. I don't know.
I'm now gonna put on my clinician's hat. I'm gonna try and unpack your brain, please. I'm curious, but no. Oh, but I think that's probably a good as place as any to start kind of wrapping it up. So before I let you go, Chandler, where can people support your work and just kind of find your general thoughts on horror?
Oh, I like how you phrase that. Thank you. They can find me. You all, if you're listening, you can find me on Twitter primarily, and that is @_shockaholic is my tag, and that's where most of my professional work it can be found. There's a lot of personal stuff, too, but nothing that I would not say in a professional environment. So if you see anything, you're like, oh, that's kind of radical. I'm like, yeah, that's how I feel. I am my brand, basically. And you can also go to spreadthebeauty.org to support all the wonderful writers and the team that we have there. It's a very you know, slow going process just due to my copious amounts of responsibilities and work for my day job. But still, the quality that you will find there and the talent you will find there is just, it warms my heart to see those people. And it just, the people that we have attracted and the work that we've attracted, I think just please support that. Spreadthebeauty.org, if you could please check out that website. And, you know, let us know your thoughts. There are comments open on the website, and you can always find me, you know, Twitter, Instagram. Say hello.
Amazing. No, thank you so much for coming on, Chandler. It's been an absolute blast, and I think we've done a good step forward into unpicking why horror. But no, thank you so much for joining me. And to my listeners, keep your ears and eyes peeled for the next episode and next guest that will be dropping.